in the event that a comparable motor vehicle is not available. It goes on to say in that section that refunds will be made to the consumer and also any lien holder, if in fact that one exists. It also provides in section 3 an affirmative defense for the manufacturer if there's been any abuse, neglect, or unauthorized modifications or alterations to the vehicle. Section 4.
Mr. Chairman, may I interrupt?
Representative, yeah.
On 3A, can you give us an example of such a nonconformity for the record?
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Under Section 3A, can you give us an example for the purposes of the record of such a nonconformity that doesn't impair the use and market value?
Okay. In a replacement of it?
Under lines 13 through 15, sub A, the affirmative defense of the manufacturer.
Oh.
That a nonconformity, give us an example of a nonconformity that doesn't impair the use and market value of a vehicle. I'm just trying to put that in the record. I'm not sure what it is.
Well, if there was a, if the person thought there was a sound that was irritating or something like that, a part of the car that the radio isn't working properly or something like that.
Thanks.
Section 4. There we are. Section 4 talks about or clarifies the fact that it is presumed to be a reasonable number of times a reasonable number of times to correct the non-conforming defect if in fact it has occurred, the same non-conforming defect has occurred 4 times or 30 days out of service. It also states that the 30 days can be extended in the event of a natural disaster, fire, flood, etc. It also goes on to explain that in the event that the person, the consumer, wants to bring this action, that he must, in fact, give the manufacturer prior written notice in order to exercise the presumption. Section number 5 states that if the manufacturer has established an informal dispute settlement procedure which substantially complies with the Federal Trade Commission's Title 16, that the consumer will exercise that program before pursuing any other action. And the intent there, obviously, is to solve the problem by keeping it out of court. That's with the dispute mechanism program, it's found that the consumer can generally get the issue resolved within less than 60 days, where if you have to file an action and go to court, you have the cost of the attorneys, you have as much as possibly 2.5 years in Portland before you have the issue resolved. Section number 6 states that any action shall commence within 6 months of the expiration date of the warranty, or 1 year following the date of the original delivery to the consumer if he exceeds the 12,000 miles. Section number 7 states that the consumer is not limited in any rights or can continue to pursue the issue if, in fact, they so desire after they've gone through the third-party mechanism. But they can't exceed the recovery, which would be provided in Section 3 and Number 8. section number 8 just indicates that the program would be implemented if it is passed after January 1, 1984. Summarizes the legislation, and if anybody has any questions on that, glad to answer.
Again, Rick, do you want to add something?
Yes, sir, if I could. Excuse me. My name is Lee Ridgway, representing General Motors Corporation. I neglected to sign in ahead of time, Mr. Chairman, but I will do that. I'll be brief. I know you have other meetings to go to. As far as General Motors is concerned, we do believe that the consumer is entitled to protection when they purchase a new vehicle, and we certainly understand the concept of House Bill 2793. The concern we have with this Lemon Law bill, and in fact all Lemon Law bills, is that in a lot of cases they may actually encourage what is already probably an adversary relationship between the dissatisfied consumer, the dealer, or the manufacturer. What we're trying to do is keep it out of court, because we know if we go to court, it doesn't matter whether General Motors prevails or whether the consumer prevails. We've undoubtedly lost that customer. We're trying to keep the customers. We're trying to keep it out of court. The proponents proposed some amendments earlier I had a chance to look at briefly, and quite frankly, if this wouldn't do it as far as we're concerned in keeping out of court, it looks almost like a full employment act for attorneys. Quite frankly, this would promote litigation, I can assure you, rather than solve it. They want to get into implied warranties and a lot of things that are difficult to define. I've been a lobbyist in California for 18 years, so I'm very conversant with the Lemon Law Bill program that they have down there, and I recognize there's a big difference between Los Angeles and Portland, for instance, but I can guarantee you that if the proponents' amendments were the law in the state of California right now, you'd have everybody going to court. In Los Angeles, you're looking at 4.5 years just to get there. And I realize that it wouldn't be that much in Portland, but this would be a great thing if you were an attorney. It'd be a great thing to have on the books. What we have tried to do is establish a third-party arbitration program in states throughout the United States. The program in the state of Oregon was put into effect in September of 1980. Since September of 1980 through December 31st of 1982, there's actually been 489 cases that have gone before the General Motors third-party arbitration program. Parenthetically, I might say that this program is run through the Better Business Bureau on a program. It's a program that General Motors contracts with the national BBB. So we contract, we pay for it. After that, it's up to them. So it's an impartial thing, and we're not involved in it. But of those 489 cases, 95.3%, they tell me, were resolved in the mediation process. It's a two-step thing, mediation, then arbitration if the consumer is not satisfied. But 466 of the 489 actually were resolved in the mediation process, which means the consumer was satisfied at least to the degree that he or she did not prefer to pursue the matter further. This is one of the highest success rates we've had in the United States on the program, incidentally. 4.7% of the cases went to arbitration. Of those, they say eight cases, the consumer got no award at all, and in 15 cases, he got an award that was equal to or greater than what had been offered through the division. And then we have 13 that are currently pending in mediation, and two that are just in arbitration right now. Representative Harper asked earlier about the number of cars sold in the state of Oregon. I can make an educated guess, Mr. Harper. California in a good year is roughly 10% of the market as far as General Motors is concerned. That's about 1 million cars a year. I think Oregon runs somewhere in the 1 to 2% range, 1.5 thereabouts. So I would guess 100 to 150,000 cars on an annual basis is about what you're talking about. Somewhere in that ballpark there.
That's just General Motors, sir?
Pardon?
That's just General Motors cars.
No, sir. That would be everybody's. That would be the total. I think the national market in Oregon, I think, runs right around 1.5%, something like that. So that would be all new cars sold. Where there are Lemon Law bills, and currently we have them in Connecticut, California, and Montana recently passed one, we try very hard to get as close as we can to a model bill at the National Auto Dealer Association. Came up with the idea of trying to get uniformity, equity for consumer, equity for everybody throughout the United States, in as much as we're doing business everywhere. those amendments are contained in the Dash 4 amendments that Mr. Austin presented and Mr. Keister has supported. As far as General Motors is concerned, while I said at the outset, we don't support lemon law bills because we don't think it's a way to go, those particular amendments are ones that we can live with and, in fact, are living with in both California and Connecticut. Those we know that we can operate within and still do the job that has to be done. When we deviate from that and we get into implied warranties, when we talk about lease agreements and a lot of other things that are contained in the proponent's amendments, it causes some genuine concerns. That concludes my testimony. I'd be
happy
to answer
the question. Mr. Ridgway, where do you work out of?
Sacramento, sir.
Sacramento. If I have a vehicle here where I have a warranty written and have purchased a new vehicle, GM vehicle, and I have a complaint regarding a defect, where do I go to contact an authorized representative?
The zone office, the closest zone office, well, there's zone offices in Beaverton, I know that.
Is an authorized representative there?
Yes, sir, those are zone offices.
At 40 hours a week?
Yes, sir.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And how long has that been true?
How long have they had zone offices in Beaverton?
Yeah.
I can't tell you. I've been with General Motors just a little over 4.5 years, and I have not lobbied in Oregon all that long, so I can't tell you, but General Motors has been doing business in the state of Oregon for an awful lot of years, so if they haven't been in Beaverton, they've been in Portland or somewhere right around. We don't keep it a secret. It's in your owner's manual.
Okay. And that's an 800 number, I take it.
No, it would list in there. If I
live in Coos Bay, can I get to that number without paying long-distance calls?
Sure.
Okay.
You could go both ways. If you happen to be in Portland, you would go local. Otherwise, you could go on an 800. There's mailing addresses there, and if you're not satisfied there, it gives you division offices through the corporation in Detroit or wherever.
Division offices in Detroit?
A division being Oldsmobile Division, Chevrolet Division, Cadillac, wherever they may be. Your owner's manual contains all the information you need to correspond with the corporation locally or at the national level.
Under the law as it exists now, I don't get a tolling of the statute of limitations when my car is in there for the purposes of filing any kind of or getting any kind of services under a 12,000 or 1 year warranty, do I?
I don't understand the tolling question. Right now, you do not have a lemon law, of course, in the state of Oregon. Right now, a dissatisfied consumer, if they are not satisfied, having pursued it through the dealer, having pursued it through the zone office, having gone even through the divisions in Detroit, could pursue it through the courts, through the Uniform Commercial Code or the Federal Magnuson-Moss Act.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the warranty goes, our warranty is 12 months, 12,000 miles.
And I understand that's reasonably common within your industry.
There are some exceptions, but I'd say that's the overwhelming majority.
I think my question was, if my car is in getting fixed for a month, the warranty doesn't extend to 13 months as a result of
what you're saying. It depends what is done. For instance, if you maybe have a new transmission in, a lot of times that would be extended. It really depends what's being done, but to my knowledge, it is not a real big problem. I mean, if you come up with some really serious problems within your warranty period, and these problems persist beyond the 12 months or beyond the 12,000 miles, you can go back, and General Motors picks that stuff up in the warranty anyway. If it started prior to the expiration of the warranty. I had a case in Sacramento a month ago. It happened to be it doesn't matter what it was. It was a GM vehicle, and a transmission went out at 48,000 miles, and we had that replaced free.
Where do I have to go to do this mediation case?
Better Business Bureau.
Where do I have to physically go to do the case?
If there is not a Better Business Bureau in Salem, it would be Portland.
And under this, assuming that I come out on top, are there provisions for reimbursement of my lost time from work and my expenses?
You can arbitrate, as far as our program goes, sir, you can arbitrate anything you want in or out of warranty. And as Mr. Campbell indicated, some of his members apparently had been reimbursed, either, I don't know if it was arbitration or just the corporation had done it, but they had been reimbursed for expenses of that type. If you felt that you had disadvantaged to the extent that you had lost time for work and or incurred motel expenses or whatever, you can put into that arbitration case anything you want to.
Be specific on why you disagree with Mr. Campbell's amendments, if you would, please.
Do you have time?
Are we going to hear this again, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Well, except there from out. It may not be bad.
Well,
actually, what I plan to do, on the other hand, is to, because we certainly see the differences in opinion about these amendments. I think both sides should get together and see what they can state or not and what's acceptable.
I agree. Assuming that those things are not resolved, I'd sure appreciate a statement, preferably in person, but at least in writing from you on behalf of GM.
I was being flip. I didn't mean to be. I was up here last week. The three of us spent quite a bit of time with Mr. Campbell, and we made some progress towards some kind of an accommodation. I was not here until today, but earlier this week, Mr. Keister and Mr. Austin, I understand, had met extensively with representatives from Osberg and I guess Mr. Campbell and some of the others, and were not able to arrive at any further accommodation beyond that, which we were able to work out last week, which is represented, as so far as we're concerned, really in the Dash 4 amendments that Mr. Austin represented.
So you're speaking on behalf of the other two people at the table?
I'm only representing General Motors Corporation. They've already spoken, but if you have questions, they can represent themselves. For my part, what I'm saying is the amendments presented by the proponents drastically deviate from the bill in place in California and Connecticut. The first witness alluded to the fact that there's been a lot of satisfaction with those bills, and they felt that the dealers down there had received some satisfaction from that, and everything looked like it was great. Well, it may be a little early to tell in California. The bill just went into effect January 4th, but I'm telling you that this bill, as proposed by the proponents, their amendments, don't look anything like California's bill, and they don't look anything like Connecticut's bill. And they would be doing, I genuinely feel, a disservice to the consumers in this state if that were the law in this state.
Could you tell me what exactly your corporate title is within the structure of GM? And also, I would appreciate it if you'd be very specific on how the further amendments to 2793 would be, I can't remember your words, but something like a lawyer's paradise.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Full Employment Act, I think, is what I said. I wish I were one in Oregon, if that were the case.
He is one.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Did you want my title?
Yes.
I'm the Western Regional Manager for Industry Government Relations, the General Motors Corporation. In that capacity, I represent them before the state legislatures in Alaska, Hawaii, Washington, Oregon, California, Arizona, and Nevada, and Utah recently.
I got a question now.
Yes, sir.
Has nothing to do with the bill.
Yes, sir.
If you delivered the Cadillacs to the Rajneesh.
Oh,
in Antelope, what do you say? Do you ever them there?
I don't know.
Just tell him you don't deal in Rolls Royces.
Well, great people think we don't deal in Cadillacs either.
You know, just to follow up on Mr. Ridgway's comment, because I was going to allude to it and it slipped my mind earlier. I think that the amendments that Mr. Campbell presented, in addition to the Dash 4 amendments to the bill, are a result of our discussion that we had last week and earlier this week, and they directly affect those concerns that they had and things that they wanted to cover that we found were totally unacceptable.
Thank you. We have 5 minutes left, and Ed Hughes asked me if he could say something. Ed? Oh, I'm sorry, I got another one written up. Michael Novay. I'm sorry. Ed, you have to wait till now. Michael, oh, you can appear. Make a joint appearance.
Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, I am not signed in, and I wanted you.
Where's Michael? Where's Michael Novay? Oh. Which one comes first?
Mr. Novay.
Oh, okay, why don't you come forward then? Ed, I'm sorry, I overlooked that.
You have to wait a minute. You have to wait.
Can we take Mr. Michael Nuffy?
We're down to a minute.
Because we have caucuses, 4 o'clock, both caucuses. We'll meet, so.
My name is Michael Novi. I'm beginning my senior year over at the Willamette Law School, and I've been asked by Osprig to come here today and present a fairly dispassionate view, at least of some points of law that are contained in this bill that the committee should perhaps be aware of, but otherwise might not be presented. I've recently written and have the Willamette Law Review's permission to submit to your committee a copy of a recent article I just published in this. It's very brief, 4 pages, concerning the Connecticut lemon law, and if you would like, I could submit that to the committee. A couple of points. First of all, I'm a bit concerned about the statement that this bill, if enacted, would open up the floodgates of litigation, be a lawyer's paradise, notwithstanding the fact that that almost admits that there are a serious number of these problems. It also is, by analogy, saying that we'll limit the amount of legal recovery so that we won't have plaintiffs bringing cause of action. If we wanted to do that, by analogy, we could reduce the number of criminal charges and also reduce the number of litigation that way. I don't think that the committee sees that as being favorable. I also don't think that the fact that the number of cars put on the market as a percentage being small necessarily turns a problem from morality to perception. I still think it's a real problem, and I think a consumer is stranded out in the road or not able to get to work, that's a very real problem for them, and it's not a perception at all. First of all, just to be brief, the other gentleman left some time here today, I will mention that this bill is an equitable action, and that as such, that in and of itself reduces the number of claims that will be brought before a court of law. If any of the members here have studied law or are lawyers, they'll know that to go into equity, the plaintiff must do equity, and they must have clean hands, and that would seriously preclude frivolous claims being brought or asserted in the courts. Second of all, the arbitration provisions in the bill, although seriously in need of specific clarity regarding the ability to appeal from them, either on the part of the manufacturer or on the part of the plaintiff, if included in the bill, should be very specific regarding that. The Connecticut law includes that provision, and I believe in their bill, only the consumer can appeal that decision if unhappy with it. Just a few points of law before I close and allow these gentlemen to speak their mind on this bill. The law does not create a new cause of action. What it does is it specifies a remedy, a replacement or a refund, and it sets up a time frame within which that remedy becomes operative. Second of all, what the bill should include that it includes in Connecticut that this bill does not include is that plaintiff should maintain repair records and that the failure to do so would preclude their ability to use this form of action. That would protect the manufacturers against frivolous claims as well. The problem with including the bill in the UCC here in Oregon, although it somewhat mirrors the explicit implied warranties, is that under that bill, those express and implied warranties are subject to modification or exclusion by the manufacturer, either through course of dealing or uses of trade. For a citation of that, you can look at Uniform Commercial Code sections 2315 and 2316. I also believe that the collateral charges provision in this bill should be considered as consequential damages, which are foreseeable as a result of the defect in the car. Now that would, of course, limit it to damages that would necessarily follow from the car breaking down on a highway, and whether or not you would have a right to stay at a travel lodge or a Hilton would, of course, limit the amount of damages you would have in that regard. As far as the manufacturer side of the bill and points of law, the committee should be aware that other substantial forms of relief do now exist whether or not this bill is enacted. First of all, there are negligence theories. There is also the restatement 402A strict liability provisions for design defects and manufacturing defect. And under the code itself, breach of express and implied warranties. An implied warranty is not difficult to determine or to decide, as it's been mentioned. What it basically means is an implied warranty of merchantability. The product should conform for its ordinary purpose. When a radio doesn't work in a car, that doesn't fit its ordinary purpose.
I'm sorry, but if you want to give some time to the two other gentlemen, because we have to quit at 4 o'clock.
Okay.
Why don't you go for a short statement, Ed, and maybe Mr. But we have to go into caucus, both caucuses.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, for the record, Ed Hughes, the Oregon Motorcycle Dealers Association, my client. If I can have you address the original version of the bill, page 1, lines 24 and 27, where it refers to steering systems, 27, it refers to doors. On page 2, line 2, where it refers to drive shafts. On page 2, line 6, where it refers to heaters, defrosters, air conditioners. I guarantee you, motorcycles are air conditioned. Also in the same line, dashboards, dashboard lights, windows. I really don't think the intent of this group was to include motorcycles in this particular piece of legislation. The group did not contact me or talk to me at all, or any of the people that are members of my group. They did not include me in the deliberations on their amendments. So, Mr. Chairman, I would respectfully, before the committee, request that the committee exempt motorcycles, mopeds, snowmobiles, motorized bicycles, motor scooters, motor trucks, ATVs, and lawnmowers from this legislation. And I believe that pretty much covers it. One other thing, and then I'll turn it over to the last person. When they talk about lawyer's paradise, when you're dealing with motorcycles, I guess we're already lawyer's paradise. Thank you.
Is that a good
one? Ed, just a minute.
One last question here. So
you said lawnmowers. I've never bought a lawnmower that wasn't a lemon.
But there are motorized lawnmowers. They're included in the bill.
I know.
Or telephone.
Mr. Brewer? Yeah. Let's listen to Mr. Brewer first.
My name is James Locke, Multnomah County.
Okay, go ahead.
And I was asked to attend this hearing today. This morning, I learned of it. I read the bill, the bills that are before you. I want to make one comment or two comments within a minute here. I know you must get to caucus. I've been practicing law in Oregon since 1959. I've represented automobile dealers over the years. I've represented consumers with claims for defective new and used automobiles, some of which have involved injury, others, most of which have not involved injury. I want to say to you that with that kind of a background, the provision in this bill that is before you with Mr. Campbell's amendment is not a full employment act for the lawyers. It is not a paradise for the lawyers. As Mr. Campbell indicated to you, the average lawyer hearing of a consumer complaint on a vehicle that does not involve serious personal injury finds it necessary from an economic standpoint to tell the prospective client, I'm sorry, I really can't help you. You can't afford to have me help you. So I respectfully disagree with that statement. The other thing that I would like to say to you is that if, with much of what Mr. Ridgway said, I am in full agreement, anything that can be done to encourage the owner of a car that doesn't work to resolve his problem with the manufacturer of the car without putting the dealer in the crossfire. The manufacturer made it. He's the one who warrants it. Anything that can be done to make the manufacturer accountable out of a court of law is, I think, socially desirable and is in the common interest of everybody, manufacturer, consumer, lawyers, whoever. And I think that this bill attempts to do that. I think that this bill attempts to bring them together. It gives the manufacturer and his agent, the dealer, four opportunities to correct the defect. Okay.
I just want to ask you, how many dealers have you represented?
I haven't attempted to number them, but not less than five over a long period of time.
And you are at this time representing a dealer?
No, I'm not presently representing a dealer. I'm not presently actively engaged in my law practice. I'm moving to California. I do happen to have bought 4 years ago a new Toronado diesel. And I do have a claim with the
Dieselgate.
Well, it's I'm presenting the claim. I'm not formally signed up, and I don't know if I'm in the 1,542, but I have talked to GM about...
But are you a member of Dieselgate?
No, I say I'm not signed up with them, but...
But you're for the bill, right?
Yes, I am basically in support of the bill.
Why don't we stop here and have...
Thank you very much.
Make a first statement.
My name is Raymond Brever, and I represent just myself. I'm one of the 156 who filed a complaint last year against the dealers, and I found myself as an individual trying to fight Ford Motor Company, and it's impossible. I dealt with their area representative from Seattle, and not only was he rude and inconsiderate to me, he absolutely wanted nothing to do with me. I dealt with the dealer, McKinney Lincoln Mercury. I also dealt with Ford directly and got absolutely nowhere. According to an economic standpoint, I put in 13,000 miles on the car, had about $1,300 into it, and everybody says you came out of it pretty good. Unfortunately, I don't want to come out of it pretty good. I ended up with a voluntary repossession on my credit rating, which I don't think I deserve because I was unfortunately stuck with an automobile that did not run. I also had lawyer fees that I... I brought this bill to Representative Hill back in January, and he started this action for me, at least on my part, and I am in support of the Lemon Law. Amendments that Mr. Campbell gave you, as opposed to the amendments you have, 2793-4, the big thing I think is the difference between the two is in Mr. Campbell's amendments it says a reasonable amount directly attributable to the use by the consumer prior to the first report of nonconformity. All right, they're saying a reasonable allowance for use shall not exceed 8 cents per mile. In Amendment 2793-4, it says, less a reasonable allowance for consumers' use of the vehicle. By putting no price on that, I think you are encouraging litigation. If you put the 8 cent per mile limit on that, you're leaving it up to, it can be dealt with out of court. There is an implied amount of cost that the person shall pay for the use of the automobile that's been returned. And I think this is important because a person doesn't want to have to go through the litigation. They don't want to have to go through the hassle. They buy a car to use, and in my trade, I'm a plumber apprentice. I need a car that I can use every day to get to work, and I drive up to 200 miles a day just going to a job, and I have to have something that I can depend on, and that's something that I did not end up with.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Committee adjourned.
Chairman, the next hearing on this bill is Monday, April 25th. Okay.